Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost and my guest today is Julie Velu. She's the Vice President of the Velu Foundation and today we're talking about the Gobi Gallop.
Many of the people that we're helping are Mongolian horsemen, and I think it's really poetic and kind of beautiful that horse people from around the world are coming in to participate and supporting, you know, the original horsemen and the last surviving horse culture on the planet. It's really pretty special.
This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. We're taking a different turn today. We're heading all the way over to Mongolia with a lovely lady called Julie Velu. Julie is the Velu Foundation's Vice President and she's the Gobi Gallop Chief. How are you, Julie?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us. Originally, you were from Canada. Right now, you're in Mongolia. Now, we've heard of the Mongol Derby. We were lucky enough to speak to an incredible man, Justin, a couple of years ago, who actually won the Mongol Derby. But this is a different type of race, isn't it? Can you tell us a bit about it?
Sure. The Gobi Gallop is not actually a race. It's more of a team sport, really. So it's an endurance ride. We do 700 kilometers in 10 days. Across a different route in Mongolia each year. And we take 10 people from around the world and people raise money to help with our foundation, which helps with the kids who scavenge in the garbage dump in Mongolia. Mm. And so people come from around the world. And it is, to the best of my research ability anyway, the longest annual charity horseback ride on the planet.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, it's pretty crazy considering I had never ridden a horse before I moved to Mongolia. And so now I do this every year. But it really is a really epic, fantastic ride. And I mean, 700 kilometers in 10 days is no small feat. And I get to meet some very, very cool people who come every year to do this and support the work of the foundation.
Julie, most people wouldn't do that in a year, let alone in 10 days. I don't think I've ever run, you know, ridden 700 kilometers before. So how long does that take? I mean, how in terms of the day, how many hours of riding would you be doing?
Most days, the goal is 8 hours. That's the goal. Sometimes it's 10 or 12, or it's even been as much as 14 some days. Of course, things are unpredictable. And so sometimes you end up, you have to keep going until there's water and feed for the horses. And sometimes where there's supposed to be water, there's not water. Mm. Or where there's supposed to be feed, there's not feed. And so things get stretched out a little bit sometimes. Mostly what happens is we get up in the morning early. We eat, we get on the horse, and we head off for a couple of hours of cantering, which is a pretty fantastic way of starting the day. And then even though it's called the Gobi Gallop, there's not really a lot of actual galloping that goes on because, of course, that just eats through the horse's endurance. And the horses that we take are some of the best on the planet, I think, actually, because we take two horses per rider. Mm-hmm. So you switch off a horse. So the horse's rest day is the day that he gets to go 70 kilometers with no one on his back, which is pretty impressive. Mm. And I actually know the Mongol Derby chief.
Oh, really?
She and I have gotten to be friends. Yeah, yeah. Being sort of crazy riding Mongolian people. And she, when she comes to Mongolia, she comes riding with me. So it's quite good. It is quite good. But they're really, really good horses, well cared for. And the Mongol Derby has quite a reputation for some wild and crazy adventures with horses. Mm. We don't have quite that sort of reputation. We have, because the horses are ridden all winter and fed all winter, and they're really well cared for, they're still not sort of your bomb-proof horse that everybody would be expecting back in the world. They're still Mongolian horses, and you can't sort of subdue that. but there's a little bit less craziness than people might expect if they're used to hearing about the Derby.
Mm. Well, with the Derby, they're given the horse on the day of the race, aren't they? Whilst with the Gobi Gallop, do they come prepared with their horses?
Our local trekking partner is called Horse Trek Mongolia, and they are the people who actually do the logistics and whatnot for the Gobi Gallop. They also do a number of other rides that they give us 20% of their profits. Oh. 20% of the tariff, sorry, 20% of the tariff, and then that all goes directly towards our project with the kids up in the garbage dump as well. So the horses that we use are horses that are owned by Horse Trek Mongolia. So they're Mongolian horses. They're trained and cared for and prepared for this event every year. And Bagi, who is the head guide there, does a tremendous job of making sure that the horses are fit enough and sound, you know, to make the journey and be fine on the other end. Because ultimately, that's the most important thing, is that the horses are fun. And second to that, well, I guess the most important thing is that people are fine. But the horses come a very close second.
And so you don't see the people being thrown, you don't see the riders being thrown off the horses and seeing wild horses like you do with the Mongol Derby, which I think is quite a nice, I feel quite uncomfortable when I'm watching these horses rearing and being caught and then, you know, riders thrown on their backs. So I like the fact that yours are already trained.
Yeah. We do, the thing is that the Mongolian landscape is dotted with holes, and you know, every now and then a horse will go down in a hole, and we always do have people fall off, but we don't have like crazy none of the rearing and that sort of wild behavior. And I'm happy to say that even though we do have people come off, we've never had a serious injury to man or beast, and we do have a doctor that comes along and medical support, and you know, we're closely allied with the International Medical Clinic in Ulaanbaatar. Should there be an event, there's, you know, we're prepared for one. But fortunately, in the 5 years that we've been doing this, we've never had to make use of that relationship, thank goodness.
Oh, well, that's good. And so you've only been going 5 years, which means you've only been riding 5 years? Or were you riding longer than that?
6 years I've been riding.
Oh, my goodness. So within 1 year of learning to ride, you decided that you were going to take all these people on an adventure for 700 kilometres across Mongolia.
Well, the first Gobi Gallop actually started, as most, you know, really great ideas do, over a bottle of red. And there were a bunch of us sitting around, and there's a mine down in the South Gobi that my husband worked at and a number of expats worked at, and it's called Oyutolgoy. And one of the fellows who was sitting around helping us consume this bottle of red also worked there, and he was quite a horseman. And he said, you know, is there any reason why we couldn't ride to OT? I've always wanted to go across the Gobi on a motorbike, but it would be fun to ride a horse. Mm. So we all said, well, that's a splendid idea. Let's do that. So I went and talked to my Mongolian trekking partner people, and actually my horseback riding instructor, Bagi. I suggested that we do this. And sort of to my face, he said, well, that's doable. We could do that. But what I found out later is after I left, apparently he went to his wife and said, Julie's gone completely crazy. she wants to ride across the Gobi Desert, he said I don't know what to tell her. And so his wife basically said, well, if these foreign people think they can do it, what, you know, are you not Mongolian? Can you not do it? Are you not as good a rider as they are? Are our horses not strong enough? All of these things. And so finally he was like, da, okay. So the first Gobi Gallop was truly an adventure, because we had no idea if we could do it, you know. And so and everywhere we stopped and talked to local people, I asked them if they'd ever heard of anybody sort of riding across the Gobi, and they said no. never heard of it. So I'm sure we're not the first people to go across the Gobi, but it was a pretty unusual thing that time. And so since then we've ridden through 5 or 6 different provinces.
Wow.
And then we go every year in June. So it's this year, it's from the 4th of June to the 15th. And then we finish it off with a really big, very fancy flash gala event in Ulaanbaatar to welcome back the riders. And we have a big charity auction and just really have a really big party, a really big celebration. Mm. And we raise a lot of money, which the Gobi Gallop actually is integral to our project. If it wasn't for the Gobi Gallop, we certainly wouldn't be where we are with our project. And we have, at the moment, we have 150 children in our kindergarten that used to be scavenging in the garbage dump. And I mean, Mongolia is a cold place. It's the coldest capital city in the world. And so these little kids out at minus 40 in the garbage is, it's just fundamentally wrong. It's just not how it should be.
No. So you've taken these children and created a kindergarten where do they sleep at night? How does this work?
So the kids go home at night. So mm-hmm. it's a Monday through Friday. So the parents, many of the parents originally scavenged in the garbage. But we're finding now that we're taking care of the children, many of them are moving forward and sort of into more regular paid employment. And the thing that I think is really beautiful is that most of the people in the garbage dump in Ulaanbaatar are there because they were herders. And in the Zud, the really bad winters that we've had recently, many of them lost their animals. I don't know if you've heard, but like in the year in 2009, 2010 winter, Mongolia lost something like 9.5 million animals.
Oh my goodness.
And so many, many families were forced off of the land because without animals, you can't survive there. But because of the political situation in Mongolia, when they come to the city, they also can't work. And so they're forced onto the garbage dump. So many, many of the people that we're helping are Mongolian horsemen. And I think it's really poetic and kind of beautiful that horse people from around the world are coming in to participate and supporting, you know, the original horsemen and the last surviving horse culture on the planet. It's really pretty special.
It sounds like a pretty incredible charity foundation to be involved with that's doing wonderful things. So thank you, Julia, for setting that up, because I think we hear of these stories a lot and we don't know how to help. And it always just takes one person over a bottle of red to come up with an incredible idea that 5 years later, you know, is really, really successful. How many riders do you get?
We've limited it to 10 is how many we take. And part of that is because we want to keep it a really special experience for the riders. And because it is a team sport and we're sort of setting off and helping each other along, we did have more riders 1 year, and we found that the riders broke off into groups. Mm. And there's some strange things that happen. Like, I mean, it's not just that you're riding a long way. It's, you know, you're really tired, like really tired. This is a really exhausting kind of thing to do. And so you're with a group of strangers in the middle, you know, of the Mongolian wilderness, and people find it very emotional. It's very stressful in some respects. It's very difficult. We had a lady come who was a sort of a professional marathon runner, and she got up on, I think on the sixth day, and she came out of her tent and she said, "This is like running a marathon and then getting up the next day and running another one and then getting up the next day and running another one." So, I mean, when you think about it, as human beings, we don't normally do something like the same activity over a period of like 14 hours, you know, for 10 days in a row. Mm. But so anyway, basically to create the kind of really special experience to make it that much better for the participants, we've limited it to 10. So this year is the first year that we still have spaces left at this late date. And I don't know if it's because we're going across the Gobi Desert again this year. We're sort of going back to the future. And we're starting down the south part of the Gobi at Yaldingam, which is a big frozen waterfall in the middle of the desert. And coming up sort of along the west side of the Gobi, we have 7 days of really beautiful, varied desert terrain. So we're in some mountains and in some hills. And of course, there's sort of open grasslands and open sand dunes and whatnot. And then we're on to the steppe for the last 4 days. This is the first year, like I said, that we're not yet full. We've had, I think, 42 people inquire. And quite a lot of applications. We don't take everybody. I screen to make sure that we have people who are comfortable in wilderness and competent and capable and all that whatnot.
Yeah, and not crazy like me. I mean, you put me in the middle of the wilderness and I'd be phoning saying, you know, "I'm not a celebrity, get me out of here."
It's, you know, I have to say, I have never seen anything more spectacular than the stars in the Gobi. Mm. Honestly, the first trip through the Gobi, I was standing there in the dark of the moon and standing looking out at the horizon, and the horizon was below. I was looking down at the horizon. It was sort of at the same level as my feet, and the stars were as bright on the horizon as they were dead above me. Never seen anything like it.
Wow.
So it's It's worth the trip. It's worth the wilderness.
Julie, you take a nice photo for me and I'll really enjoy that moment for you.
It's not the first time I've heard that.
So. If you're brave and you like endurance, then it sounds like the most incredible trip that you could take, like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
It really is epic. The things that people have said, you know, after the Gallup, it really is pretty life-changing. And, you know, we do start the Gallup. We go up and have a visit up at the charity so people can have a chance to meet the kids that they're helping and have a look at the work that we do and whatnot. And so this year we're going to be flying people down to the South Gobi as part of the whole Gallup. So you get a little internal Mongolian plane flight as well. Just
oh,
for
nice.
Added adventure.
Yeah, super, super brave. Now,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I have heard that in the wilderness, you see all sorts of things, from camels to horses. What are the horses that you see?
The number of wild horses running around, like free-range horses, I should call them, like literally hundreds, probably thousands. I mean, when we were scouting this ride, a herd of 700 horses I rode through, and lots of antelope, and the Przewalski horse. There's Przewalski horses running around in the Gobi, which we're hoping to run across. We're running through their area. I mean, we can't schedule it, but lots of eagles and kites and really, really big birds. And, of course, lots and lots of vultures because there's lots of dead animals lying around. We did one time on a trek, we ran into there was one tree in the middle of the desert on the first Gobi Gallup, and there were six saker falcons in one tree, which is something of a miracle, really, because falcons normally don't like to share their spaces.
Wow.
But so we have there's wild ass as well, which is different, and we often see deer, and so it really is where the deer and the antelope play.
Yeah, but Julie, what do you do in these situations? Okay, so I'm in the beautiful New Forest at the English countryside, and I see pigs and cows and wild, you know, owned by commoners, half wild horses, and go into complete meltdown of my horse is going to freak out. If the horses gallop off, that's it. I've lost control. My horse is going to go too. So the thought of seeing wild antelope and 700 wild horses, how do your horses cope with this?
They're fine with it. Because they are free range horses and because they run around out in the wilderness themselves, they've run across these things. By and large, the only thing that we kind of worry about sometimes is camels, because where our horses are stationed, there's not very many camels. And so some horses are familiar with camels and some are not. And so the ones that are not familiar with camels, it's a bit scary. We had a funny thing last year on the Gallup. We had a filmmaker come along, and there's a documentary that's going to be finished sometime in the next couple of months. And so she had a drone. And so unbeknownst to us, sort of up the road from us, or well, up the valley, there was no road. There was a herd of camels. And so she had her drone over taking a photograph, you know, taking a film of the camels, which managed to stampede the camels towards us.
Oh no! What happened?
It actually it all ended fine. It was fine. We saw that we could see the camels coming because you could see this, all this dust going up. And we saw this. We're just like, oh no. So we went the other way. Essentially, we just turned around and we went away at a very lovely flying trot, you know, to stay away from the camels. And the camels, she realized what she was doing, and she, you know, put the drone down, and it all ended peacefully. But there was a couple of moments there where we thought, this could all go horribly wrong.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I can't wait to watch that video.
Yeah. No, it's going to be really stupendous, I think.
So far, you have 150 children at the kindergarten, and yeah, 8 children are on scholarship at private schools now. That's incredible.
Yep.
And 300 children at the Soaring Crane summer camp. What's that they do?
A lot of the older kids that are on the garbage dump are, they're sort of in the process of trying to decide what their life is going to look like, as, you know, many 10, 11 and 12 year olds do. The problem is they, of course, are very disenchanted with sort of their future, and they don't have a lot of hope. So the Soaring Crane summer camp is a hands-on experiential learning camp for them. So they go and we reconnect them with their Mongolianness, their history and their culture, which Mongolians are very proud of. So they do horseback riding and they do bridle tying, and we have a bunch of cows and they milk the cows, and then they make arul, the dried milk product that's like the dried yogurt that we then give to the old people in the community at Saginsar at their Lunar New Year. So the kids go to the 13th century camp, and they go hiking and swimming and hiking and do, you know, all of the sort of fun stuff. But we really take an opportunity to give them some stuff like human rights education, life skills mapping. We try to connect them to mentors once they've identified what kind of thing they would sort of like to be or what they would like to do. Mm. And we try to connect them to somebody that's already operating in that industry or business and give them some direction, some idea of how it is going to be possible for them to do what they want to do. And it's based kind of on the theory that you sort of never know what's going to be the thing that sparks someone, motivates them to do what it is, what's necessary to be done. Because really, all of these kids, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old children, yes, they're behind in school, and yes, their life has been difficult, and they're not socialized, but they're still, you know, very competent and capable young people who have their whole life in front of them. Mm-hmm. And so with some guidance and assistance and effort on their part, they really can do whatever it is that they want to do. So that's what the Soaring Crane Summer Camp is about.
It's amazing. And some of these children have now ended up going and working on vocational training programs too. So you really do follow them through from when they're real babies, well, from when they're 11, right up to adulthood. Yeah.
So we've got the kindergarten is for 3 to 6 year olds. And then our local NGO partner has a remedial school for 6 to 16 year olds. And the summer camp is also for 6 to 16 year olds. And we take the kids from the garbage dump, and we also take children who are what we call ninja miners. So if you're in England, you're in British history back in the 1800s, you know, the children that would go down in the mines and work in really terrible conditions. It's similar here. There's kids that go down to essentially in holes in the ground, very unsafe and not, they call them starlings because they chirp like little birds from under the ground. And so they're about 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And then after that, they're too big for that particular job. So we take the ninja miners and we take some of them. There's other poor children from different areas that survive by going and picking pine nuts and then selling them at the roadside. Mm-hmm. And then there's also some poor kids from the countryside. And so part of what we're doing with all of that is to break down some barriers as well for them. I mean, these kids are really ostracized from society. And so it's really a great opportunity for them to get to see that, well, first of all, that they're not alone, you know, that there are other children in difficult circumstances, and there are other communities that will welcome them, and that they can make friends, and that they can, you know, have fun, and that there is a version of a normal life that's available to them all.
Oh my goodness. It's heartbreaking.
I was just in the garbage dump, actually. I've been in the garbage dump 3 times in the last 2 days. And it's really, I mean, it is a difficult and confronting thing to do, but it really is pretty lovely to go in there. And when the kids are like, oh, hey, how's it going? Whatever. So I'm getting to know them a little bit. So that part's good.
But it's lovely that you're going in there to take them out of that and give them a better future.
Yeah. So the great thing about the work that we're doing right now, I think, is that it's not yet generational in Mongolia. They don't you know, this is a new problem. And so we're working really hard to stop it before it becomes generational and trying to connect the kids back and the families back to their culture. And horseback riding is, of course, it's such a really natural fit. And so, you know, I'm feel really lucky that I managed to figure out how to learn to ride a horse at 50. So it's really completely changed sort of how I'm approaching the whole rest of my life. And so, and I should say that one of the things on the Gallup, as speaking of tradition, is that everybody who comes has to ride at least 20 kilometers in the original Mongolian comfort saddle, which is, yes, exactly what you think, one of those wooden monstrosities.
Oh my goodness, and not comfortable at all.
It's not bad, actually. It's not nearly as bad as it looks. But it's a good appreciation for what the guides are going through because they, you know, they ride in that all the time. And then we auction it off at the end at the gala. The official saddle of the Gobi Gallop gets auctioned off and usually raises like $4,000 or $5,000, which is pretty fantastic.
Wow. That's a lot of money. A lot of money for a saddle. The horses are well cared for, you mentioned earlier. So do you have vets at each spot to make sure that their backs aren't sore? And, you know, what are your procedures for making sure the horses are looked after?
So we bring along a traditional Mongolian vet. He takes care of the horses along with our head guide. We don't have a Western vet. We've never needed a Western vet. It's really interesting, actually. And part of the things that people really like is watching the traditional vet work his magic. For example, one time he just looks over and he just tells somebody, just stop, get off that horse. This person stops, gets off, and he just proceeds. He doesn't say anything. He just proceeds to start taking the saddle off. And he's got this very, like, I don't know, 30 meter long rope. And he just starts tying it around the horse in this extremely bizarre fashion. So it gets like, and so this is where I have to admit, I'm an idiot savant when it comes to horseback things, because I learned in Mongolia a lot of horse vocabulary I know in Mongolian, but not in English. So if I use the wrong word, that's why. But so
you can educate us, Judy.
You know, so anyway, so he's tying the rope sort of under his belly and over his withers and down around his back, and he's trussing him all up, and everybody is like, what is he doing? And so in the end, the horse's back feet are tied together, and then they're tied to the rope at the front or whatever. And then he just smacks the horse on the butt to make him kick and buck. And everybody's thinking there's something terrible going on. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what he was doing, but I just trust him because I know him very well, and he really, really, really cares for the horses. So after it's all finished, I asked him what that was all about. And he said that the horse had put his back out because the rider had been going too quickly the horse was gone from walk to gallop with nothing in between, straight from walk to gallop.
Wow.
And so the horse had put his back out. And so this was him having the horse put his own back in place. And
wow. See, so then, that's perception. It sounds like abuse, but it's not abuse. He's helping the horse. Gosh.
Yeah. So then it was my horse too, really. So then the next day the horse, you know, they rode the horse and, you know, he went for the rest of the gallop. So, I mean, we have six horses who have done the gallop every year. And I find that really, really fantastic. Mm-hmm. That these horses have this amazing endurance and ability to go. And so we've had one or two footsore horses is all. They're not shod, they're barefoot, and just as Mother Nature intended. And so they do a good job of taking care of the horse. We really haven't had any problems. One time we did have a guide brought a horse who just wasn't in good enough shape. And so it was pretty clear by the fourth day that this wasn't going to work. So they just left him with a family that they'd never met before, that they'd never seen. They just said, here, take care of my horse, okay? We'll be back in a couple of weeks to get him. So, only in Mongolia. I mean, I think one of the other cool things that happens always on the ride is Baggy always buys a horse to bring along with us, usually a two-year-old. Mm-hmm. So, because that way he can add to his herd, you know, different bloodlines and whatnot. So we get to go shopping for a baby and then bring the horse home. So it's kind of a fun thing to do.
Sounds like
shopping
fun.
In Mongolia in the middle of the Gobi Gallop. It is fun.
So If we want to get involved and we'd like to join you on your Gobi Gallop in June this year, then we just need to head to your website, mm-hmm. which is www.horsetrekmongolia.com/Gobi-Gallop. We will put that on Horse Hour as well, so you can have a look on Twitter, Facebook and our website and see the link, and it will take you straight through. I highly recommend it for all you brave endurance riders. I think it sounds like just the most phenomenal adventure to be able to go on and obviously help the Valoo Foundation and Children of the Peak Sanctuary Project. Julie, can we follow you on Facebook, Twitter?
Yes, and Instagram.
And Instagram. What are your handles?
It's at Valoo Foundation, and at HT Mongolia is Twitter. Uh-huh. And then Horse Trek Mongolia is Instagram. Facebook is just Horse Trek Mongolia or Valoo Foundation.
Amazing.
So, and we actually, we have a Gobi Gallop page on Facebook as well. And so there's film footage there of what it's like to ride the Gobi Gallop.
Oh, great.
And lots of photos, and there's some articles that previous Gobi Gallopers have written. And so it's a pretty good resource for people who might be interested in coming along to see what it's really like. And so the one thing that I would say is that for some reason, we'll have spots left this year. We only take 10 people. And next year, we already have 24 very serious applicants. So it's looking very much like next year may already be full. And so people interested in coming might, I know it's not that far in the future, but they might really consider that this would be the June to come.
Okay, well, we need to get onto your website and have a look then. Horsetrekmongolia.com. Julie, thank you so, so much for joining us today. But hopefully when you're there in June, you can send, if you have any signal, you know, under the stars, then maybe you could send us some photos.
I absolutely will. We actually have we do a Facebook thing where you can follow us and you can see where we're going. Like we plot our route with a GPS, but I will see if we can get you some photos. That would be fun.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Julie. See you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you'd like to follow Julie and her Gobi Gallop, then have a look at them on Twitter. It's at HT Mongolia, Facebook at Gobi Gallop and Horse Trek Mongolia. And of course, you can follow the foundation and the wonderful work that they're doing at Valoo Foundation. You can catch all previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk. And while you're there, why not pop in your email address? And then you never have to miss an episode again. We've got lots of education articles for you. Spring is nearly here, so there's lots of tips on looking after your horses in the springtime. And I'm really looking forward to welcoming B&W Equine Vets. They're going to be back soon to give us some more advice on veterinary problems and diseases. As always, I love to see the journeys that you go on with your horses. What have you got planned for the next few weeks? Are you going to an eventing competition? Maybe you're trying some dressage or popping some jumps? Drop us a message at Horse Hour on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. I hope you have a really good week with your horse and I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.